Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is David Smildy, who's a senior fellow at the Washington Office of Latin America, specializing in Venezuela, and a professor of sociology at the University of Georgia. His research focuses on social movements, human rights, and culture in Venezuela. And Professor Smildy has researched Venezuela for the past 20 years and lived there for a total of 10 years, during which time he taught at the Universidad Central de Venezuela and the Universidad Católica Andrés Bello. He currently is working on a book called Venezuela's Transition to Socialism, Politics and Human Rights Under Chavez, 2008 to 2012. Welcome to Background Briefing, David Smildy.
Thank you for the invitation.
And David, we stayed in touch as things have begun to unravel in Venezuela, and there are a lot of street protests that have been continuing now for weeks, started by some students, apparently by student movements, and it's largely being portrayed as a struggle between the middle class and the poor. The poor support the government and the middle class. Much of what we hear, at least the mail I get criticizing my coverage, says that, oh, they're all the oligarchs on the pay of the CIA, which is, of course, what Maduro keeps saying at all. But when I see pictures of the protesters, they may be middle class, but they don't look particularly rich, at least in an American middle class context. So give me a picture, since you're there, of who's fighting who.
Okay, this is, I think, indeed, these are protests that are largely middle class that are fighting against a government that presents itself as representing the lower classes. There has not been a whole lot of participation from other social classes in these protests, which does not mean that there's not widespread dissatisfaction with the government. It just means that they're not participating in these protests. These protests are largely manned by students that are from the autonomous and from the private universities. In other words, public autonomous universities and private universities, which are sort of bastions of the opposition now for 10, 15 years. And they are protesting against the government, largely about issues, the classic issues of the sort of middle-class base of the opposition, issues that have to do with liberty, have to do with freedom of expression, have to do with freedom of protest, as well as economic freedoms. And so what really got these protests going is that it was protests that were repressed. You know, these protests have been going now for more than a month, and they started relatively small, but the government has, the National Guard and police forces have really acted really strongly against them with violence and jailing students, and that ends up getting more students out into the street. And I think it's not just that they're not just protesting about the repression, but I think that is sort of a metaphor for their larger discontent with the government, which they see as getting increasingly authoritarian, ever less democratic, and also, you know, behind that are some social and economic problems. You know, there's scarcity, there's inflation. The economy is doing very poorly, and there's just a lot of insecurity. So I think a lot of these are young people who are thinking, you know, what country am I going to have in the future? And so I think it is wrong to see these students as oligarchs or the sons of the elites or, you know, the rich and the wealthy. These are people that in the United States would be middle class. They'd be average kids. No, here they are relatively elite in the sense that it's a poor country, and the majorities are poor. But these are normal, everyday sort of kids that are seeing, you know, that there's not going to be a country for them, at least in the terms that they want in the future, and that's what they're protesting about.
But it seems that the government is engaged through these collectives, through these groups that go around on motorcycles and shoot up middle-class neighborhoods, that they're riding a tiger, aren't they? When a government unleashes vigilantes, it could get really ugly. I mean, one of the people that was just shot yesterday was a guy that was painting his house. And these guys come by on, swarm by on motorcycles. And then there was, of course, a 24-year-old university student studying mechanical engineering. He was shot in the chest. And on the other side, there was an army major, I think, shot in under mysterious circumstances. So give me a sense of these roaming bands of colectivos.
Okay, these colectivos, this is a situation that's very worrying. But I think it's important to have some historical perspective on this and try to keep it, you know, in the correct frame. Many of these colectivos actually date from before the Chavez period. No, in the 1980s, these colectivos, at least some of the most well-known ones, developed in western Caracas and different parts of the country among sort of, they ended up being sort of leftist community groups that did a lot of community things, but they also frequently were armed and they imagined themselves as sort of being urban guerrilla force. And they have, you know, during the Chavez period, they sort of conceive of themselves as the defenders of the revolution. That if, you know, the Chavez government, and the Chavez and now Maduro government can't defend itself, it's up to them. And many of them are armed. And so, indeed, this is a big problem, you know. And I think without a doubt, some of these deaths in the protests have been at the hands of the colectivos. Now, there's a problem with this, and that is that, you know, I think this image of the colectivos gets blown way out of proportion because I think it's an image that has a really high resonance for sort of middle-class fears of, you know, poor people coming down and, you know, engaging in violence against them. And I think internationally, it really fits very nicely into the whole sort of rogue state narrative about countries like Venezuela. And so I think it's really been keyed into by journalists and I think blown out of proportion. Now, basically, anytime there are gunshots that, you know, happen in a protest and they don't come from uniformed police officers, well, then it's the colectivos. Anytime now that, you know, there's a group of two or more poor people on motorbikes, it's colectivos. So just the other day, a week ago, there was violence, you know, here in Caracas, and you read the news reports and you talk about colectivos coming to this neighborhood, but if you look closely at who it was that died, it was a National Guardsman, and it was a moto taxi. It was a motorcycle taxi driver. No, it wasn't protesters that died. It was two people that were sort of either working for the government or government followers. And so, you know, it's a very worrying thing, and I think, you know, especially you look at the cases of Cuba, you look at the case of Iran, you look at how sort of these vigilante groups can be used to quell protests and really sort of be used as a para-state mechanism to keep protesters in line. I think it's a very, very important issue. In fact, the other day I wrote an op-ed in which I referred to them as warlords and said that the government has the power and needs to disarm these groups and needs to do something about it, because it's not, you know, having people that are not actually state agents in control of security is not something, is in itself a violation of human rights. And so I think it's a very serious issue, but it's something that needs to be kept in proportion, you know, and especially in this case where we have, you know, a month of protests in which there's been 25 murders. And oftentimes this now people say, oh, the government has killed 25 people. And they say, oh, the colectivos have killed 25 people. And actually, you look at it, you know, among those 25, 10 are opposition activists. You know, 4 are government supporters, 3 are National Guardsmen, and 7 people are citizens that haven't participated in the protests at all. And so, you know, there's violence on each side. As you mentioned, when we started talking here yesterday, there were 2 people killed in Valencia, and there was 1 National Guardsman. No, there's violence. There's arms on both sides. Venezuela is a country that has a real problem with gun control. No, I think there's probably even a higher per capita circulation of guns in Venezuela than there is in the United States, and there's arms on both sides. And so they're mainly small arms, but it's an issue on both sides.
But given what you've just described, this incendiary situation with a highly polarized polity between, you know, roughly speaking, the middle class and the poor, and lots of arms floating around, it seems to me that the government is not being particularly helpful. Aren't they driving the polarization? Haven't they done that from the beginning? Essentially declared class warfare. That seems to be state policy. And much of the media is controlled by the Chavistas, isn't it? They used to
be.
Yeah,
I think, absolutely. Absolutely. The, you know, one of the policies of the government for the past 10 years, you know, Chavez learned this lesson very well, and I think Nicolas Maduro has learned it as well, is that class polarization is in their interest. No, if they can polarize the population on class terms, well, then they win elections. They have, you know, 50 to 60% on their side, simply because most people in Venezuela are poor. And so, you know, they could. The thing is, the irony is that the opposition sort of gleefully welcomes this idea of class polarization because they have this tendency, you know, in the past 15 years to always think that they are the majority. They're absolutely convinced that they are the majority. In fact, one of the hashtags that the opposition use is Somos Mayoría, we are the majority. And they always think that the government is illegitimate and steals elections. And so it's this situation that the government has really taken advantage of, because if they can polarize, well, they win. And I think that indeed is part of what's going on here. The government has, you know, basically taken what was a modest protest movement at the end of February and has created this enormous protest movement basically by its actions, by repressing these protests and jailing people. And, you know, that has really put fuel on the fire. And I think part of that is, you know, certainly there's some hardline people in the government, but others think that, you know, this is something, there's a lot of people that have this sort of revolutionary discourse in this government that think that it's through conflict that they gain more control over the state and that they can further the revolution and that they can defeat the oligarchs that are trying to roll back the revolution. And so they're really pushing that direction. And the example that they think of and refer to is, you know, the previous conflict 10 years ago, 2002, 2004, there was also a real period of polarization and conflict. And Chavez ended up coming out ahead on that. You know, by the end, he won a recall referendum, and he was really seriously strengthened because he had full control of the government and the oil company. And so I think there's people in the government that think that, you know, this is a good thing. It's going to help Maduro really gain control over the country. I think the situation actually is quite different in the sense that one of the reasons that Chavez came out on top in 2004 and really strengthened his hold on the country was that oil prices went up, and with some of the economic policy changes that they undertook, there was a real period of economic growth, and so people were very happy and they saw their opportunities increasing. I don't think that's going to happen in Venezuela in the next year or two. No, I think it's possible that it could. But, you know, looking at the government's economic policies, I think there's still more economic hardship to come. And so I don't really think that this polarization is going to help the government in the way it has before. I think, you know, once this protest cycle recedes, I think that, you know, the government is going to encounter some very serious popularity problems like it had last September or October.
Well, David Smalley, I thank you very much for joining us from Caracas, Venezuela.
Thank you.
Again, I've been speaking with David Smalley, who's a senior fellow at the Washington Office of Latin America, specializing in Venezuela, and a professor of sociology at the University of Georgia. Professor Smalley has researched Venezuela for the past 20 years and lived there for a total of 10 years, during which time he taught at the Universidad Central de Venezuela and the Universidad Católica Andrés Bello. He's currently working on a book called Venezuela's Transition to Socialism, Politics and Human Rights Under Chavez, 2008 to 2012. We're going to take a brief station break. We're back looking into the chaos in Libya as the country appears to be poised to fall apart.